completed since the future.
I wonder if you want to do this. That's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
This fog is entitled Cantabile and the Clavichord. Cantabile means what?
Singing.
Yeah, singing. And one of the traits of singing is, I think I mentioned this before, that the voice just naturally gets a little bit louder, a little softer, very nuanced dynamics. And I was really fascinated to see that both Sebastian Bach and Emanuel Bach pointed to cantabile as an ideal in playing an instrument. J.S. Bach said in his preface to the Inventions and Symphonias of 1723, this instruction book, it was also for compositional enlightenment, but most of all to achieve a cantabile style and playing. And Emanuel Bach, in his big essay of 1753, said, above all, lose no opportunity to hear artistic singing. And also, he said in his autobiography of 1773, my chief effort, especially in recent years, has been directed towards both playing and composing as songfully as possible for the clavier, notwithstanding its lack of sustaining power. So in Germany, a clavier could mean really just general keyboard, any keyboard, but specifically it could also mean the clavichord. And in this statement, I think it's pretty obvious he means the clavichord because he mentions its lack of sustaining power. Of course, we could hear, if you have a really good clavichord, it does sustain. But his object was to compose as songfully and play as songfully as possible. So I kind of researched what might they have meant by pointing to cantabile as an ideal. And I looked at 18th century vocal treatises, and they point out a great deal of nuance that an 18th century singer should develop. One, and many of them mentioned connection of tones or gliding of the voice, which would be legato. Also dynamic nuance, rubato, and embellishment. And they're on your handout, so I won't go through that. You can read those later. The 18th century keyboard most capable of doing this, all this type of nuance, was the clavichord. As I said earlier, the piano was very new, and most people didn't have a piano. And even in the late 18th century, many people did not have a piano. When Haydn composed his E-flat sonata for his friend in Vienna, he said, well, I should have written it for, and this is, I think it's 1790, I should have written it for a keyboard of your type, but I'm just not used to it anymore, which, really meant he should have composed it for harpsichord. She still had a harpsichord, and she was a wealthy woman. So I thought that was really interesting that, people didn't just throw out their harpsichords. Because here came Haydn and Mozart. So the instrument that was around was the clavichord for touch sensitivity and all of this type of flexibility and singing qualities. It was also considered the best instrument for keyboard beginners, most especially to develop musical expressivity. Lulein in 1765 praised the clavichord's ability to foster, quote, refinement in touch and expression. And Forkel of 1802 was J.S. Bach's first biographer. He stated that, and Forkel interviewed Sebastian's sons, especially Carl Philippe, and I think also Wilhelm Friedemann. So we're on pretty good foundation to say, well, there was something here when he stated that J.S. Bach preferred the clavichord due to its capability for, quote, great variety of nuances. Well, what could he mean by great variety of nuances? What do you think? Would be?
Dynamics.
Yeah, the dynamic nuance that you could do with a touch. Yeah, and anybody who's played the clavichord and today is a great day to try it many different times. You know, you see, you have a real connection from your finger to the strings, and you have to control and create the sound. So it was indeed an excellent instrument for developing that. Some people say, well, the clavichord was good just for practice, you know, and developing your strength of fingers. But I don't think that the sources really bear that out so much. Yeah, it does develop strength of fingers, but the main beauty that people saw in clavichord was the variety of nuance, the flexibility and that singing quality. And C.P. Bach also stated that it is at the clavichord that a keyboardist may be most exactly evaluated. So, you know, get the harpsichord, organ, this is the clavichord. So we see from C.P. Bach's comments, also in his keyboard treatise of 1753, that he admired this cantabile style of playing that included both legato and dynamic nuance. And here's some quotes that show that. He said, "French keyboard pieces have always been good schooling due to their flowing and correct style." Flowing, legato. He's talking about, you know, the French school, Couperin, and so forth. And also, he stated, "In order that the strings may be attacked as well as caressed," see, got the variety, "and be capable of expressing purely and clearly all degrees of forte and piano," he's talking about the strings, "they must be resilient." So, and here's where a good builder comes in, because a good builder, such as Paul Irvin, researches the size, the gauges of the strings for a particular instrument. They have to be resilient enough that you could get a sweet sound that way. If they're really tight, it just sounds hard. Mm-hmm. So, and also, of course, you can't do baboon, but there's a lot of other things you can't do. You just want to feel that flexibility in the keys. And how many of you have never played a clavichord before? Okay, so when you first sit down at a clavichord, just you have to find the right depth of the key. You can't just play like, you know, really shallow. You've got to, it's kind of a clinging feeling. And Joan Benson, who's a great clavichordist, mentions, and I think she's right, that there's this feeling of drawing your fingers back, though you don't really move them on the keys, but this is the feeling in your fingers that you're clinging to it and you're drawing back. So, you know, just try, you have to find where, as I said, what the depth is to get a good sound. So the clavichord just is a really different technique from other keyboard instruments. So the best thing is, if you've never played clavichord or trying to improve your clavichord playing, just start with just single notes, and maybe just the middle three fingers of your hand. That feeling of clinging to the keys. I think I talked about that. Right. And you know that, yeah, the tangent does not fall back after striking. Paul mentioned that. So you're in control of the sound, and you have to hang on to the key the entire time. It's not like a piano where you could just go beep, and, you know, and then just relax. Okay, I'm done. It's kind of nice. But here, you know, you have to hang on to the key. And after a while, it becomes really enjoyable. You just, because you're so in control of that sound with your fingers. Let's see what else I was going to say. Right, and as Paul mentioned about the baboon or the vibrato, which you could do at times. C.P. Bach sometimes wrote in places where he wanted vibrato. For instance, in the farewell, at one point he sold a clavichord, a big clavichord, the Silbermont, built by Silbermont. And in this one, we have the manuscript and the autograph, and he wrote in places where he wanted vibrato. Three little dots and like a slur on top of it is the indication. And generally, it's in places, I think always, where it's a longer note. But not on every long note, but just here. Yeah, too, there's a long note, and that's held in the base with a vibrato marking. But also he mentions trochanter tuna. So he said the clavichord shares in the attractiveness of the piano, which I would take to mean that, you know, it's touch sensitive, but it also has, he says, the baboon and the trochanter tuna. Well, he describes trochanter tuna literally translates carry the tone. And he says it's just he does it with an extra pressure. And it wasn't until recently that I actually heard what he was talking about, because I did a lot of voicing on my clavichord, and it's more flexible feeling now. And also on this one, you can hear where the sound seems to grow. I'll get really quiet on this. So I'll play it, and then I'll press the finger down. It does raise the pitch, but it is, seems to carry it. Maybe I can find it. This is louder. There. Yeah. And Charles Murray visited Emanuel Bach, one of his travels, and there's a whole description of the wonderful evening he had in listening to Emanuel Bach play the clavichord. And he said, and the cries and the, you know, he managed to get cries of complaint, and I mean, you can just imagine his playing was so really emotional. I think that's all. Do you have any questions? Did I cover what you want to know about the clavichord, or if I know, yeah.
Okay. Does it? You know, on the harpsichord, you have to be careful to not put too much pressure.
On the harpsichord?
On the harpsichord. Does it matter how much pressure you put on when you're playing? Can you put too much flat pressure, and what would happen if you did?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, on the keys, you mean, right? Yeah.
Right, digging in.
Right. Yeah, well, if you dig in too far, you're going to raise the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to raise the pitch, that's great, but you want to find the point at which you're not, I mean, in the beginning, find the point at which you're not raising the pitch, but yet you're getting a good sound. So it has to go down far enough to achieve that. Let me start with your strongest finger, it's the third finger. But then just experiment if you go farther down, you know. You're going to get that, which you might want as an expressive feature, but you don't want to be doing it just because you didn't have control. Yeah. So it's a, mm-hmm.
Was there a marking used at all to tell you to do the tone or tone or you just had to sort of know when?
Yeah, I've never seen any indication of trochanter tuna. That's just I guess when you feel that that's a note that needs
a longer note, yeah.
I don't know, it just, it's an expressive thing. There's so many expressive notes in that fantasy in F sharp minor. There's a lot of space. Well, I was doing vibrato more than the other trochanter tuna, but if I had more time at the instrument, I might experiment with that. Mm-hmm. It's very subtle, and of course, the clavichord was really for the player most of all, but it's nice to be the listener too, I think. But some of these things are so subtle that it's really into the miniatures.
Now, when you're practicing or playing, how much of it is weight and how much it is finger?
How much arm weight?
Yeah, and from the shoulder.
Well, it depends on the instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one takes more arm weight than mine at home. I don't know why. It's a full bodied instrument.
Yes, it is.
It just takes a little more. So, yeah, and Paul worked with me on that too. Sometimes I just need to use the arm because, if I'm not getting enough from the finger, then use the arm.
Do you notice that it actually comes from the small of the back?
Oh. Well, no.
That's what the Russians teach for
piano
technique.
Well, I don't know if you need it that much, for a clavichord. It's just a little bit. Yeah, that was for the piano, right, because of the heavier action. There's no reason not to use it, yet you want to be able to move your fingers independently, too.
Well, I notice when I'm practicing, if my shoulders are tight,
there's
no tone, or less tone.
Yeah,
and
right.
Once they drop, the notes drop right down into the finger.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Yeah, and though the finger has to be strong, you need to be relaxed behind the finger. Otherwise, you're going to have all kinds of trouble. And you won't get as good a sound, as you said.
I just want to say I enjoyed the ballet of your hands. Where your fingers seem to go a little further on the left, and then all of a sudden I could just see your left hand. But then all of a sudden it seemed like they got a little crowded, but it didn't sound crowded. It just looked a little crowded.
Oh.
It was just beautiful to watch as well as to listen to.
It's not a choreography with playing a clavichord. One of the things is you need to stay at the edge of the key. Otherwise, the sound is, you just can't get the sound very well. If you go up here, it's really hard, but here. So, I go through it. I have to mark the fingers. The fingerings are so different for clavichord than they are what I would use for forte piano or harpsichord. And also moving your arm around where it needs, so you can get the finger at the edge of the key.
Because it almost seemed like your fingers were almost like this, but I was at this edge, and it was just amazing what I could watch from here. It was just beautiful.
It is choreography.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you're reading the music on this app?
Oh, yeah.
I saw it turn pages on its own.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a dream come true.
It's great.
I'd like to know a little bit more about what is it, and what is it like playing from there versus playing from paper?
It's no different. It's just more convenient because of the page turning is with your foot. Android like I do, it's mobile sheets. And then you get the air turn, and you pair it, it's the Bluetooth, you pair it with the, and to get the scores in, that's pretty simple. You scan, from the printer to your computer, put that into Dropbox, and then it will import. Yeah, if you're
that's
a piano accompanist, I wish I had it when I was doing it.
And you have to mark. I guess you've already marked on the paper.
You can mark that. Yeah, you can mark. Well, this tablet has a pen.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, really. Like I just discovered recently how it actually works. Yeah, you can change the.
Did you feel like it changed your life?
It's a Gutenberg
tablet. And put scores.
So you can always get that one device.
Yep. Yeah. So for a year, there were things I did with this clavichord that I wasn't doing with mine, so I just put it in red. Things I needed to remind myself, but yeah, to put it lots of different colors. No, for what?
To put it on that tablet.
No.
It's fair use.
You have to buy the program, the, you know, mobile sheets or Fourscore.
But if you copy the music, it's fair use. Fair use to make copies of the music that you purchased.
Yeah, and you can go on the IMSLP, and you could download a lot of those directly onto it, too. The red is what I did for
the... Can you erase the red?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you can erase it, too.
And is that something you just write on the screen?
Yeah.
And you just erase it?
A mechanical device to your page that you would like thread behind
your sheet. Go here, and you just press that.
Any other?
I have a little question. When is it using more Babel or Vibrato? Might change your effect for tuning? Do you have to tune it more often? Or if you had a really heavy strike?
Yes, right. That could be what was happening today. When you tune, you want the, after you get it to the pitch you want to press in and try to make sure it's not going to waver for now. But still, when you play, sometimes it's kind of puts it out. I use the Aaron Neidhart, basically.
Okay.
It's a sixth common E tone. The flat tonalities are pure. You have D flat, D flat, G flat.
Oh, yeah.
And then you temper it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get, actually, you can get online, you can get an app for, there's one, Clear Tune.
I have that. That's actually what I use, but I was just wondering, like, what temperament you had.
That's the one with, mine's a little different than the one in Clear Tune. And you can adjust the because it gives a character that you can play in all of these.
It sounds sort of like the old fashioned way.
Oh, I just
regular tuner.
Really?
Just when they were doing it right. Rather than using electronic tone.
Yeah, where it's awesome.
Yeah. It sounds so mechanical.
You go to Pitch Labs for a tuner, then you can have a whole variety. Neidhart is 5 for Neidhart.
Oh, yeah, that's
so, Pitch Labs. Yeah, it'd be Pitch Labs Pro. You buy the free Pitch Labs. And then you get the option of upgrading for $3 to get the Pro.
Pretty good. Maybe
$3.99. The old boxes just got $250 just for like $5.
Yeah, that has way more options.
Yeah, I used that for years, and then it became some questions about when you turn it to certain intervals, it's not quite right. So it's really long, long box. Suggested doing this one, and the guy who's consultants for the tunings on this is quite knowledgeable. But he does know his stuff, and got some better tunings. It doesn't have the turning over because I guess they just don't believe in it now. Because Berkman's isn't really a great keyboard, you know. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. The Latin isn't a great keyboard temperament either. It's just that it's good for string players. Because the for GDAE, the violinist, it's the same pitches that keyboard uses, but it's much easier to cohere the string section of the keyboard. But for keyboard music itself, it's... Yeah, oh, we use that for years. I used it for years. That is what I have in that and Kronberger and that one and so forth. They were easy ones to start learning how to use, but I suspect we went back in the day. Well, the fretted instruments had to have the positions of the tangents marked out for the whatever time of the okay? But none of those, I've heard of yet, none of those margins match any known temperament. So they were doing their own thing. I'm sure, how many musicians like to tune? You found something that worked for you until something didn't sound right in a piece you really liked, and you adjusted a little bit. But it didn't, you know, how many angels can dance right at the pin here and start splitting all these things into varieties. I mean, it's a pursuit, but it's not something that musicians really want to spend a lot of time doing. I want to play it.
So in the pit flag, is there a particular name to it? You showed me this whole list.
Yes, there was a blur. Yeah.
Is there one that's better?
It's going to depend to a certain extent, I guess. I mean, if you're dealing with the CPE, era music and so forth, then like, she likes it during night harp and you have to figure out who the And there are some night harps on here, and like I said, four or five, and you can try some, and it doesn't quite do it for you. Try another one, you know, for that. And there's a matter of, beyond a certain point, taste and so on. And
do all of them then, so I get 8440?
You have 8440, 441, 42. All you have comes in a calibration system like this is. I flip that to show you before all the temperaments you have. And then when you go back again, it's 415 hertz. Two of these instruments are 415. You hit that, you go back, then you delete that and change it to 440 or 417 or 520 or whatever else.
And the instrument.
No, you. By this late, I believe that you were pretty much, you had maybe a half a semitone window. But there isn't nowadays with violins, guitars, there's really no latitude. You know, I want to go up a half a semitone with this scale and up because it's an instrument. And they had enough, they could hear enough. Having the right pitch for an instrument is a matter of the string needs to sound the best. You want to, they're somewhat stiff, they're not overly flexible. So when you have inflexible strings, you get inharmonicities as the pitches get higher. And getting the string to get the most heard harmonics lined up to be in tune, what you want.
So it could be like the brand of the string?
I don't know so far. Most of the brass, I don't think it's that much latitude.
But I know in reed strings and guitar,
yeah.
That's not way different.
Oh,
which brand it
was. Oh yeah, right, because you change the material, you probably change the gauge, okay? But the scaling itself isn't really changing, because it's
but
still the sweet spot.
But as far as tuning, the gigahertz, could resonate with the wood or the string to decide what might be the best place for any
With the pitch, you're, it's what I call a pitch center. You get the temperament, then you get the intervals adjusted, and that depends upon the keys you're playing in, and that can kind of move you to change the tune. So. You're welcome. Good.
Yeah. Well, I have a harpsichord at home, and I didn't build it, but I've always thought you could start on a harpsichord, something a little bit more tidy and durable. So, where is this place to look for something like that?
Zuckerman.